poverty cannot humble or bend. Nor is it exile that we praise. It is the man who withdraws into exile in the spirit in which he would have sent another into exile. It is not pain that we praise. It is the man whom pain has not coerced. One praises not death, but the man whose soul death takes away before it can confound it. All these things are in themselves neither honorable nor glorious, but any one of them that virtue has visited and touched is made honorable and glorious by virtue. They merely lie in between, and the decisive question is only whether wickedness or virtue has laid hold upon them. For instance, the death which in Cato's case is glorious is, in the case of Brutus, forthwith base and disgraceful. For this Brutus, condemned to death, was trying to obtain postponement. He withdrew a moment in order to ease himself. When summoned to die, and ordered to bare his throat, he exclaimed, "I will bare my throat, if only I may live." What madness it is to run away, when it is impossible to turn back! "I will bare my throat, if only I may live." He came very near saying also, even under Antony, "This fellow deserved indeed to be consigned to life." But as I was going on to remark, you see that death in itself is neither an evil nor a good. Cato experienced death most honorably, Brutus most basely. Everything, if you add virtue, assumes a glory which it did not possess before. We speak of a sunny room, even though the same room is pitch dark at night. It is the day which fills it with light, and the night which steals the light away. Thus it is with the things which we call indifferent and middle, like riches, strength, beauty, titles, kingship, and their opposites, death, exile, ill health, pain, and all such evils, the fear of which upsets us to a greater or less extent. It is the wickedness, or the virtue, that bestows the name of good or evil. An object is not by its own essence, either hot or cold. It is heated when thrown into a furnace, and chilled when dropped into water. Death is honorable when related to that which is honorable. By this I mean virtue and a soul that despises the worst hardships. Furthermore, there are vast distinctions among these qualities which we call middle. For example, death is not so indifferent as the question whether your hair should be worn evenly or unevenly. Death belongs among those things which are not indeed evils, but still have in them a semblance of evil. For there are implanted in us a love of self, a desire for existence and self-preservation, and also an abhorrence of dissolution, because death seems to rob us of many goods and to withdraw us from the abundance to which we have become accustomed. And there is another element which estranges us from death. We are already familiar with the present, but are ignorant of the future into which we shall transfer ourselves, and we shrink from the unknown. Moreover, it is natural to fear the world of shades, whither death is supposed to lead. Therefore, although death is something indifferent, it is nevertheless not a thing which we can easily ignore. The soul must be hardened by long practice, so that it may learn to endure the sight and the approach of death. Death ought to be despised more than it is wont to be despised. For we believe too many of the stories about death. Many thinkers have striven hard to increase its ill repute. They have portrayed the prison in the world below and the land overwhelmed by everlasting night, where, within his blood-stained cave, hell's warder huge, doth sprawl his ugly length on half-crunched bones, and terrifies the disembodied ghosts with never-ceasing bark. Even if you can win your point, and prove that these are mere stories, and that nothing is left for the dead to fear, another fear steals upon you. For the fear of going to the underworld is equaled by the fear of going nowhere. In the face of these notions, which long-standing opinion has dinned in our ears, how can brave endurance of death be anything else than glorious, and fit to rank among the greatest accomplishments of the human mind? For the mind will never rise to virtue if it believes that death is an evil, but it will so rise if it holds that death is a matter of indifference. It is not in the order of nature that a man shall proceed with a great heart to a destiny which he believes to be evil. He will go sluggishly and with reluctance. But nothing glorious can result from unwillingness and cowardice. Virtue does nothing under compulsion. Besides, no deed that a man does is honorable unless he has devoted himself thereto and attended to it with all his heart, rebelling against it with no portion of his being. When, however, a man goes to face an evil, either through fear of worse evils, or in the hope of goods, whose attainment is of sufficient moment to him, that he can swallow the one evil which he must endure. In that case, the judgment of the agent is drawn in two directions. On the one side is the motive which bids him carry out his purpose. On the other, the motive which restrains him and makes him flee from something which has aroused his apprehension or leads to danger.